Jamie. 2 days' ride to either side of the King's Road, they pass through a wide swathe of destruction. Miles of blackened fields and orchards, where the trunks of dead trees jutted into the air like archers' stakes. The bridges were burnt as well, and the streams swollen by autumn rains, so they had to range along the banks in search of fords. The knights were alive with howling of wolves, but they saw no people. At Maidenpool, Lord Mouton's red salmon still flew above the castle on its hill, but the town walls were deserted, the gates smashed, half the homes and shops burned or plundered. They saw nothing living, but a few feral dogs that went slinking away at the sound of their approach. The pool from which the town took its name, where legend said that Florian the Fool had first glimpsed Jonquil bathing with her sisters, was so choked with rotting corpses that the water had turned into a murky, grey-green soup. Jamie took one look and burst into song. Six maids there were in a spring-fed pool.
What are you doing?
Brian demanded.
Singing. Six maids in a pool, I'm sure you've heard it. And shy little maids they were, too, rather like you, though somewhat prettier, I'll warrant.
Be quiet, the wench said, with a look that suggested she would love to leave him floating in the pool among the corpses.
Please, Jamie, pleaded Cousin Cleos. Lord Mouton is sworn to Riverrun. We don't want to draw him out of his castle, and there may be other enemies hiding in the rubble.
Hers or ours? They're not the same, cuz. I have a yen to see if the wench can use that sword she wears.
If you won't be quiet, you'll leave me no choice but to gag you, Kingslayer.
Unchain my hands, and I'll play mute all the way to King's Landing.
Now what could be fairer than that, wench? Brian!
My name is Brian!
3 crows went flapping into the air, startled at the sound.
Care for a bath, Brian?
He laughed. You're a maiden, and there's the pool. I'll wash your back. He used to scrub Cersei's back when they were children together at Casterly Rock. The wench turned her horse's head and trotted away. Jamie and Sir Cleos followed her out of the ashes of Maidenpool. A half mile on, green began to creep back into the world once more. Jamie was glad. The burned lands reminded him too much of Eris.
She's taking the Duskendale Road, Sir Cleos muttered. It would be safer to follow the coast.
Safer, but slower. I'm for Duskendale, cuz. If truth be told, I'm bored with your company. You may be half Lannister, but you're a far cry from my sister. He could never bear to be long apart from his twin. Even as children, they would creep into each other's beds and sleep with their arms entwined, even in the womb. Long before his sister's flowering, or the advent of his own manhood, they had seen mares and stallions in the fields, and dogs and bitches in the kennels, and played at doing the same. Once their mother's maid had caught them at it. He did not recall just what they had been doing, but whatever it was had horrified Lady Joanna. She'd sent the maid away, moved Jamie's bedchamber to the other side of Casterly Rock, set a guard outside Cersei's, and told them that they must never do that again, or she would have no choice but to tell their Lord Father. They need not have feared, though. It was not long after that she died birthing Tyrion. Jamie barely remembered what his mother had looked like. Perhaps Stannis Baratheon and the Starks had done him a kindness. They had spread their tale of incest all over the Seven Kingdoms, so there was nothing left to hide.
Why shouldn't I marry Cersei openly and share her bed every night? The dragons always married their sisters.
Septons, lords, and small folk had turned a blind eye to the Targaryens for hundreds of years. Let them do the same for House Lannister. It would play havoc with Joffrey's claim to the crown, to be sure, but in the end it had been swords that had won the Iron Throne for Robert, and swords could keep Joffrey there as well, regardless of whose seed he was.
We could marry him to Marcella once we sent Sansa Stark back to her mother. That would show the realm that the Lannisters are above their laws, like gods and Targaryens. Jamie had decided that he would return Sansa, and the younger girl as well, if she could be found. It was not like to win him back his lost honour, but the notion of keeping faith when they all expected betrayal amused him more than he could say. They were riding past a trampled wheat field and a low stone wall when Jamie heard a soft thrum from behind, as if a dozen birds had taken flight at once. "Down!" he shouted, throwing himself against the neck of his horse. The gelding screamed and reared as an arrow took him in the rump. Other shafts went hissing past. Jamie saw Sir Cleos lurch from the saddle, twisting as his foot caught in the stirrup. His palfrey bolted, and Frey was dragged past, shouting, head bouncing against the ground. Jamie's gelding lumbered off ponderously, blowing and snorting in pain. He craned around to look for Brienne. She was still a horse, an arrow lodged in her back and another in her leg, but she seemed not to feel them. He saw her pull her sword and wheel in a circle, searching for the bowman. "Behind the wall!" Jamie called, fighting to turn his half-blind mount back toward the fight. The reins were tangled in his damn chains, and the air was full of arrows again. "At them!" he shouted, kicking to show her how it was done. The old sorry horse found a burst of speed from somewhere. Suddenly they were racing across the wheat field, throwing up clouds of chaff. Jamie had just enough time to think. The wench had better follow before they realize they're being charged by an unarmed man in chains. Then he heard her coming hard behind. "Evenfall!" she shouted as her plough horse thundered by. She brandished her longsword. "Tarth! Tarth!" A few last arrows sped harmlessly past. Then the bowman broke and ran, the way unsupported bowmen always broke and ran before the charge of knights. Brienne reined up at the wall. By the time Jamie reached her, they had all melted into the wood 20 yards away. "Lost your tears for battle?" "They were running." "That's the best time to kill them." She sheathed her sword. "Why did you charge?" "Bowmen are fearless so long as they can hide behind walls and shoot at you from afar, but if you come at them, they run. They know what will happen when you reach them. You have an arrow in your back, you know, and another in your leg. You're to let me tend them." "You? Who else?" "The last I saw of Cousin Cleos, his palfrey was using his head to plough a furrow. I suppose we ought to find him. He is a Lannister of sorts." They found Cleos still tangled in his stirrup. He had an arrow through his right arm and a second in his chest, but it was the ground that had done for him. The top of his head was matted with blood and mushy to the touch, pieces of broken bone moving under the skin beneath the pressure of Jamie's hand. Brienne knelt and held his hand. "He's still warm. He'll cool soon enough. I want his horse and his clothes. I'm weary of rags and fleas." "He was your cousin." The wench was shocked. "Was," Jamie agreed. "Have no fear. I'm amply provisioned in cousins. I'll have his sword as well. You need someone to share the watches." "You can stand a watch without weapons?" She rose. "Chained to a tree? Perhaps I could, or perhaps I could make my own bargain with the next lot of outlaws, and let them slit that thick neck of yours, wench. I will not harm you, and my name is Brienne, I know. I'll swear an oath not to harm you, if that will ease your girlish fears." "Your oaths are worthless. You swore an oath to Ares." "You haven't cooked anyone in their armour, so far as I know, and we both want me safe and whole in King's Landing, don't we?" He squatted beside Cleos and began to undo his sword belt. "Step away from him now. Stop that." Jamie was tired. Tired of her suspicions, tired of her insults, tired of her crooked teeth and her broad, spotty face and that limp, thin hair of hers. Ignoring her protests, he grasped the hilt of his cousin's longsword with both hands, held the corpse down with his foot, and pulled. As the blade slid from the scabbard, he was already pivoting, bringing the sword around and up in a swift, deadly arc. Steel met steel with a ringing, bone-jarring clang. Somehow Brienne had gotten her own blade out in time. Jamie laughed. "Very good, wench." "Give me the sword, Kingslayer." "Oh, I will." He sprang to his feet and drove at her, the longsword alive in his hands. Brian jumped back, parrying, but he followed, pressing the attack. No sooner did she turn one cut than the next was upon her. The swords kissed and sprang apart and kissed again. Jamie's blood was singing. This was what he was meant for. He never felt so alive as when he was fighting, with death balanced on every stroke. And with my wrist chained together, the wench may even give me a contest for a time. His chains forced him to use a two-handed grip, though of course the weight and reach were far less than if the blade had been a true two-handed greatsword, but what did it matter? His cousin's sword was long enough to write an end to this Brian of Tarth. High, low, overhand, he rained down steel upon her, left, right, backslash, swinging so hard the sparks flew when the swords came together, upswing, sideslash, overhand, always attacking, moving into her, step and slide, strike and step and strike, hacking and slashing, faster, faster, faster. Until, breathless, he stepped back and let the point of the sword fall to the ground, giving her a moment of respite. "Not half bad," he acknowledged. "For a wench?" She took a slow, deep breath, her eyes watching him warily. "I would not hurt you, Kingslayer." "As if you could." He whirled the blade back above his head and flew at her again, chains rattling. Jamie could not have said how long he pressed the attack. It might have been minutes or it might have been hours. Time slept when swords woke. He drove her away from his cousin's corpse, drove her across the road, drove her into the trees. She stumbled once on a root she never saw, and for a moment he thought she was done. But she went to one knee instead of falling, and never lost a beat. Her sword leapt up to block a downcut that would have opened her from shoulder to groin, and then she cut at him again and again, fighting her way back to her feet, stroke by stroke. The dance went on. He pinned her against an oak, cursed as she slipped away, followed her through a shallow brook, half choked with fallen leaves. Steel rang, steel sang, steel screamed and sparked and scraped. And the woman started grunting like a sow at every crash. Yet somehow he could not reach her. It was as if she had an iron cage around her that stopped every blow. "Not bad at all," he said when he paused for a second to catch his breath, circling to her right.
"For a wench?"
"For a squire, say? A green one?" He laughed, a ragged, breathless laugh. "Come on. Come on, my sweetling. The music's still playing. Might I have this dance, my lady?" Grunting, she came at him, blade whirling, and suddenly it was Jamie struggling to keep steel from skin. One of her slashes raked across his brow, and blood ran down into his right eye. "The others take her, and river run as well." His skills had gone to rust and rot in that bloody dungeon, and the chains were no great help either. His eye closed, his shoulders were going numb from the jarring they'd taken, and his wrists ached from the weight of chains, manacles, and sword. His long sword grew heavier with every blow, and Jamie knew he was not swinging it as quickly as he'd done earlier, nor raising it as high. "She is stronger than I am." The realization chilled him. Robert had been stronger than him, to be sure. The White Bull, Gerald Hightower as well, in his heyday, and Sir Arthur Dane. Amongst the living, great John Umber was stronger. Strongbore of Crakehall, most likely. Both Cleganes, for a certainty. The mountain's strength was like nothing human. It did not matter. With speed and skill, Jamie could beat them all. But this was a woman. A huge cow of a woman, to be sure, but even so, by rights, she should be the one wearing down. Instead, she forced him back into the brook again, shouting, "Yield! Throw down the sword!" A slick stone turned onto Jamie's foot. As he felt himself falling, he twisted the mischance into a diving lunge. His point scraped past her parry and bit into her upper thigh. A red flower blossomed, and Jamie had an instant to savour the sight of her blood before his knee slammed into a rock. The pain was blinding. Brian splashed into him and kicked away his sword. "Yield!" Jamie drove his shoulder into her legs, bringing her down on top of him. They rolled, kicking and punching, until finally she was sitting astride him. He managed to jerk her dagger from its sheath, but before he could plunge it into her belly, she caught his wrist and slammed his hands back on a rock so hard he thought she'd wrenched an arm from its socket. Her other hand spread across his face. "Yield!" She shoved his head down, held it under, pulled it up. "Yield!" Jamie spit water into her face. A shove, a splash, and he was under again, kicking uselessly, fighting to breathe. Up again. "Yield, or I'll drown you."
"And break your oath?" he snarled. "Like me?"
She let him go, and he went down with a splash. And the woods rang with coarse laughter. Brian lurched to her feet. She was all mud and blood below the waist, her clothing askew, her face red.
"She looks as if they caught us fucking instead of fighting."
Jamie crawled over the rocks to shallow water, wiping the blood from his eye with his chained hands. Our men lined both sides of the brook. Small wonder we were making enough noise to wake a dragon.
"Well met, friends,"
he called to them amiably. "My pardons if I disturbed you. You caught me chastising my wife."
"Seems to me she was doing the chastising."
The man who spoke was thick and powerful, and the nasal bar of his iron half-helm did not wholly conceal his lack of a nose. These were not the outlaws who had killed Sir Cleos, Jamie realized suddenly. The scum of the earth surrounded them, swarthy Dornishmen and blond Lyseni, Dothraki with bells in their braids, hairy Ebonese, coal-black summer islanders in feathered cloaks. He knew them, the brave companions. Brian found her voice.
"I have 100 stags,"
a cadaverous man in a tattered leather cloak said.
"We'll take that first tart, my lady." "And then we'll have your cunt,"
said the noseless man.
"It can't be as ugly as the rest of you."
"Turn her over and rape her ass," roared,
urged a Dornish spearman with a red silk scarf wound about his helm.
"That way you won't need to look at her."
"And rub her on the pleasure of looking at me,"
Noseless said, and the others laughed. Ugly and stubborn though she might be, the wench deserved better than to be gang-raped by such refuse as these. "Who commands here?" Jamie demanded loudly.
"I have that honour, Sir Jamie."
The cadaver's eyes were rimmed in red, his hair thin and dry. Dark blue veins could be seen through the pallid skin of his hands and face.
"Urswick I am, called Urswick the Faithful."
"You know who I am?" The sellsword inclined his head.
"It takes more than a beard and a shaved head to deceive the brave companions."
"The bloody mummers, you mean?" Jamie had no more use for these than he did for Gregor Clegane or Amory Lorch. Dogs, his father called them all, and he used them like dogs to hound his prey and put fear in their hearts. "If you know me, Urswick, you know you'll have your reward. A Lannister always pays his debts. As for the wench, she's high-born and worth a good ransom." The other cocked his head.
"Is it so? How fortunate."
There was something sly about the way Urswick was smiling that Jamie did not like. "You heard me. Where's the goat?"
"A few hours distant. He will be pleased to see you, I've no doubt. But I would not call him a goat to his face. Lord Vargo grows prickly about his dignity."
"Since when has that slobbering savage had dignity?" "I'll be sure and remember that when I see him. Lord of what, pray?"
"Harrenhal, it has been promised."
"Harrenhal? Has my father taken leave of his senses?" Jamie raised his hands. "I'll have these chains off." Urswick's chuckle was papery dry. "Something is very wrong here." Jamie gave no sign of his discomfiture, but only smiled.
"Did I say something amusing?"
Noseless grin.
"You're the funniest thing I've seen since Biter chewed that scepter's tits off."
"You and your father lost too many battles," offered the Dornishman. "We had to trade our lion pelts for wolf skins."
Urswick spread his hands.
What Kimian means to say is that the brave companions are no longer in the hire of House Lannister. We now serve Lord Bolton and the King in the North.
Jaime gave him a cold, contemptuous smile. And men say I have shit for honour. Urswick was unhappy with that comment. At his signal, two of the mummers grasped Jaime by the arms, and Rogue drove a mailed fist into his stomach. As he doubled over, grunting, he heard the wench protesting.
Stop! He's not to be armed. Lady Catelyn sent us an exchange of captives. He's under my protection.
Rogue hit him again, driving the air from his lungs. Brienne dove for her sword beneath the waters of the brook, but the mummers were on her before she could lay hands on it. Strong as she was, it took four of them to beat her into submission. By the end, the wench's face was as swollen and bloody as Jamie's must have been, and they had knocked out two of her teeth. It did nothing to improve her appearance. Stumbling and bleeding, the two captives were dragged back through the woods to the horses, Brienne limping from the thigh wound he'd given her in the brook. Jaime felt sorry for her. She would lose her maidenhood tonight, he had no doubt. That noseless bastard would have her for a certainty, and some of the others would likely take a turn. The Dornishmen bound them back to back atop Brienne's plough horse, while the other mummers were stripping Cleos Frey to his skin to divvy up his possessions. Rorg won the blood-stained surcoat with its proud Lannister and Frey quarterings. The arrows had punched holes through lions and towers alike. "I hope you're pleased, wench," Jaime whispered at Brienne. He coughed and spat out a mouthful of blood. "If you'd armed me, we'd never have been taken." She made no answer. "There's a pig, stubborn bitch," he thought. "But brave, yes. He could not take that from her. When we make camp for the night, you'll be raped, and more than once," he warned her. "You'd be wise not to resist. If you fight them, you'll lose more than a few teeth." He felt Brienne's back stiffen against his. "Is that what you would do, if you were a woman?"
"If I were a woman, I'd be Cersei."
"If I were a woman, I'd make them kill me. But I'm not." Jaime kicked their horse into a trot. "Urswick, a word." The cadaverous sellsword in the ragged leather cloak reined up a moment and fell in beside him.
"What will you have of me, sir? And mind your tongue, or I'll chastise you again."
"Gold," said Jaime. "You do like gold." Urswick studied him through reddened eyes.
"It has its uses, I do confess."
Jaime gave Urswick a knowing smile. "All the gold in Castle Rock. Why, let the goat enjoy it. Why not take us to King's Landing and collect my ransom for yourself? Hers as well, if you like. Tarth is called the Sapphire Isle, a maiden told me once." The wench squirmed at that, but said nothing.
"Do you take me for a turn, cloak?"
"Certainly. What else?" For half a heartbeat, Urswick considered the proposition.
"King's Landing is a long way, and your father is there. Lord Tywin may resent us for selling Harrenhal to Lord Bolton."
"He's cleverer than he looks." Jaime had been looking forward to hanging the wretch while his pockets bulged with gold. "Leave me to deal with my father. I'll get you a royal pardon for any crimes you have committed. I'll get you a knighthood."
"Sir Urswick,"
the man said, savouring the sound,
"how proud my dear wife would be to hear it. If only I hadn't killed her."
He sighed.
"And what of brave Lord Vargo?"
"Shall I sing you a verse of the reigns of Castamere? The goat won't be quite so brave when my father gets hold of him."
"And how will he do that? Are your father's arms so long they can reach over the walls of Harrenhal and pluck us out?"
"If need be. King Harren's monstrous folly had fallen before, and it could fall again.
Are you such a fool as to think the goat can outfight the lion?"
Urswick leaned over and slapped him lazily across the face. The sheer casual insolence of it was worse than the blow itself. "He does not fear me," Jamie realized with a chill.
I've heard enough, Kingslayer. I would have to be a great fool indeed to believe the promises of an oath-breaker like you.
He kicked his horse and galloped smartly ahead. Ares, Jamie thought resentfully. It always turns on Ares. He swayed with the motion of his horse, wishing for a sword. Two swords would be even better. One for the wench and one for me. We'd die, but we'd take half of them down to hell with us.
Why did you tell him Tarth was the Sapphire Isle?
Bryene whispered, when Urswick was out of earshot.
He's like to think my father's rich in gemstones.
You best pray he does.
Is every word you say a lie, Kingslayers? Tarth is called the Sapphire Isle for the blue of its waters. Shout it a little louder, wench. I don't think Urswick heard you. The sooner they know how little you're worth in ransom, the sooner the rapes begin. Every man here will mount you. But what do you care? Just close your eyes, open your legs, and pretend they're all Lord Renly.
Mercifully, that shut her mouth for a time. The day was almost done by the time they found Vargo Hoat, sacking a small sept with another dozen of his brave companions. The leaded windows had been smashed, the carved wooden guards dragged out into the sunlight. The fattest Dothraki Jamie had ever seen was sitting on the mother's chest when they rode up, prying out her chalcedony eyes with the point of his knife. Nearby, a skinny, balding septon hung upside down from the limb of a spreading chestnut tree. Three of the brave companions were using his corpse for an archery butt. One of them must have been good the dead man had arrows through both of his eyes. When the sellsword spied Urswick and the captives, a cry went up in half a dozen tongues. The goat was seated by a cook fire, eating a half-cooked bird off a skewer, grease and blood running down his fingers into his long, stringy beard. He wiped his hands on his tunic and rose.
Kingslayer, he slubbered, you are my captive.
My lord, I am Bryene of Tarth, the wench called out. Lady Catelyn Stark commanded me to deliver Sir Jamie to his brother at King's Landing.
The goat gave her a disinterested glance.
Silence, sir.
Hear me, Bryene entreated as Rorg cut the ropes that bound her to Jamie. In the name of the King of the North, the king you serve, please listen.
Rorg dragged her off the horse and began to kick her.
See that he don't break any bones,
Urswick called out to him. The horse-faced bitch is worth a weight in sapphires.
The Dornish man, Timian, and a foul-smelling Ibanez pulled Jamie down from the saddle and shoved him roughly toward the cook fire. It would not have been hard for him to have grasped one of their sword hilts as they manhandled him, but there were too many, and he was still in fetters. He might cut down one or two, but in the end he would die for it. Jamie was not ready to die just yet, and certainly not for the likes of Bryene of Tarth.
This is a sweet day,
Vargo Hoat said. Around his neck hung a chain of linked coins, coins of every shape and size, cast and hammered, bearing the likenesses of kings, wizards, gods and demons, and all manner of fanciful beasts.
Coins from every land where he has fought, Jamie remembered.
Greed was the key to this man.
If he was turned once, he can be turned again.
Lord Vargo, you were foolish to leave my father's service, but it is not too late to make amends. He will pay well for me, you know it.
Oh, yes, said Vargo Hoat. Half the gold in Casterly Rock I shall have, but first I must send him a message.
He said something in his slithery, goatish tongue. Urswick shoved him in the back, and a jester in green and pink motley kicked his legs out from under him. When he hit the ground, one of the archers grabbed the chain between Jamie's wrists and used it to yank his arms out in front of him. The fat Dothraki put aside his knife to unsheathe a huge curved arrack, the wickedly sharp scythe sword the horse lords loved.
They mean to scare me,
The fool hopped on Jamie's back, giggling, as the Dothraki swaggered toward him. The goat wants me to piss my breeches and beg his mercy, but he'll never have that pleasure. He was a Lannister of Casterly Rock, Lord Commander of the King's Guard. No sellsword would make him scream. Sunlight ran silver along the edge of the Arrak, as it came shivering down almost too fast to see. And Jamie screamed.